If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Today's Greatest Generation was recorded weeks ago, but comes out just a few days after the death of Aaron Eisenberg, who played Nog on DS9.
Yeah, we are recording this on the Sunday night after he passed away, and we just felt like it would not be right to put out an episode without acknowledging the great work that Aaron Eisenberg put into the world, the positive energy that he put into the world, and express our condolences to his family and friends because he went too soon.
You hear all the time about how Star Trek is a family, and that family is definitely hurting right now, so we just want to send his friends and family, all of our best.
It's one of those moments that makes you realize that you don't have any idea how much time you have, and so make the most of it.
That's definitely a feeling that's been expressed, right? Because he was 50, which is terribly young.
Yeah, and I think we've already talked quite a bit on this show about how much admiration we had for him as an actor. I mean, I think he kind of came onto the show as just kind of almost like an extra, but
yeah.
But kind of really like came into his own as an actor over the course of Deep Space Nine to the point where I think the writer's room really noticed what a powerful instrument he had and started giving him more and more to do.
Yeah, he kind of made the case for himself and his character, didn't he?
Yeah, and in a lot of ways became one of the emotional cores of a really great television show.
Yeah.
He will be missed. Not just the cast and crew of Star Trek, but a lot of fans around the world are really sad right now. And I think we are too.
Yeah, you can't mingle with the community and go to events and not have heard about just what a lovely guy Aaron Eisenberg was.
Yeah. It's kind of strange because we've got, probably 2 months worth of episodes recorded that are in the can and unreleased. So it's hard to know like how any of that will play, but we didn't want to let this moment pass without acknowledging what a great dude Aaron Eisenberg was and what a tragedy is that he's gone.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine. It's a Star Trek podcast about Deep Space Nine from a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica. What's the show about again?
Embarrassment?
It is.
I think top line embarrassment, and then like you go down one bullet point and indent one space.
Mm-hmm.
Star Trek.
Really, that's a real, like, slide-read take on what we do. I mean, if we were going to just have, like, an image yeah, that were to tell the story of The Greatest Generation, what do you think that would be?
I don't know. Us scrambling to turn off the podcast when our wives walk in on us recording it?
I'll give you a hint. It's the image I just sent you, which was my driveway and two drains into my sewer line. That feels like us, right? Two drains into a sewer.
Yeah.
That's you and me.
It us. And, aspirationally, we want digital sunglasses to be descending on those two drains.
Mm-hmm.
And then the text "deal with it" popping up.
Yeah. I mean, that's how you make it funny.
Yeah. Adam, I had a bad bit moment yesterday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Do you want to do our beloved segment, All I Do Is Bits?
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment. I don't think I have one, but I sure would like to hear yours.
So, I, as you know, have terrible skin. Skin is really the bane of my existence.
Yeah.
You know, recently my wife got us new insurance, so our insurance changed. And every time insurance changes, I try and see a dermatologist because there's always just fun, all kinds of fun shit going on with my skin. But one thing that has been bothering me since I was in college is a little patch of skin, like just above my knee on my thigh, but on the back. Always a little bit itchy.
It's the part of your leg that your dick touches, right?
I wish my dick got down there. That would be great.
That's where I measure from. I measure from the back of my knee upwards.
And this is not eczema or psoriasis.
It's not a tag.
It's like 4 or 5 square inches of just slightly itchy skin.
13 inches is a tough load. I don't treat you gently.
Oh, it's not something you can sink a pin into.
No, and it's not something you can even see. There's not like a rash or anything. But this dermatologist I've been going to see, she had an x-ray done of my spine to see if there was like a nerve being pinched or something.
That sounds excessive.
I know.
Like you get a spinal tap for a rash. What kind of doctor are you going to? Hey, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick.
She sends me to a neurologist then. Hmm. And I went to the neurologist and he did like a pretty lengthy battery of tests on me, mostly to do with my balance to see if he could detect any neuropathy that might be leading to this.
When you went to the office for the first time and you were given like the new patient ingestion forms, did you ask for extra blank pages and were like, I just got insurance, so I'll be having the everything you do.
Yeah, the pent-up demands form.
I don't know. I've never had an MRI. What's that like?
I mean, it has been floated as a possibility in the investigation of this ailment. So I saw the neurologist. He was like a weird older gentleman, and he ran a series of tests on me, and then just kind of, you know, was like, I don't think this is neurological. I think your dermatologist is wrong. And you got a bum steer.
Throwing some shade.
So the dermatologist then I had a follow-up with because she needed to, like, make a determination based on whatever the neurologist decided. And she's like, opening up my my file, and I'm watching her just mess around on the iPad, and she goes, whoa. And it's not something you love hearing in a doctor's office. And I said, what's up? And she said, nothing. It's just that he sent a real hell of a document here. And she turns the iPad around and shows me. And what he wrote when he was meeting with me was like every thought that he had, both things that he spoke out loud and also things that he thought in his mind, he wrote out in like extremely ornate longhand cursive.
What? Had you noticed he was doing this when he was with you?
I mean, I could see that he was writing, but I didn't see what it looked like. And when she turned it around, it was like super aspirational level of cursive that he writes in. And I go, boy, got a real Declaration of Independence situation here. Is this John Hancock on the bottom of that? And the dermatologist just goes, what do you mean?
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
Wow. How do you make a reference more broad than that?
I know. I didn't know the answer to what do you mean. Like, that's how at a loss I was that didn't go over.
What did you do?
I think I just played it off like I don't know. Just goofing around, you know? Like one of those. Don't pay any attention to me.
Wow.
That's the fallacy, right? Is that like you start to tell yourself that you're worth paying attention to and you're not.
People tell me that all the time. I wonder if your dermatologist wasn't doing that thing where a person is reading and you're saying something and they don't pay attention.
Yeah, maybe.
And then clearly, like, your body language is expecting a reaction to a thing that you said, and she's like, oh, shit, I wasn't listening. I'll say this. If I happen to be distracted while having a conversation with somebody like my wife, and I realize, like, oh, shit, like, I need to snap back into attention.
I didn't register the last few lines that she said.
What do you mean is sort of a great reply. Because it's asking for more information, but not admitting that you weren't listening.
Yeah, but it also kind of had the tone of like a pretty girl in high school saying that to you in terms of like, I can tell that you think you're funny, but I am here to tell you that you're not funny, you know?
The typing into her iPad intensifies after this moment. Like, I now believe beyond the shadow of a doubt that Benjamin's problem is neurological. Did you tell the derm that the other doc said that they were wrong? Like, did you straight up say it? Wow.
No, I mean, it was in the report. She didn't send me to this guy saying, you have a neurological disease and need to go see this guy. She said, your x-ray came back normal. There's nothing obviously, you know, pinching any nerves, but I'll send you to the neurologist and see if any further investigation is warranted. So he's basically saying he thinks she's barking up the wrong tree in terms of diagnosing what's going on here. So like, I've never gotten a satisfying answer, and like the idea that like there might be a specialist that can actually do something about this has been very enticing to me.
Do you think it has anything to do with the piece of meteorite you keep in the pocket of your cargo shorts? I mean, I'm just spitballing here.
Yeah, it's just lightly irradiated at all times.
Yeah. Wow, so the mystery continues, huh?
Yeah, just another disappointing skin thing for me.
Medical stress is the most purely American stress there is, right? It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it.
I love it too.
Speaking of unique, Ben, I don't think we will ever see an episode like the one we're about to discuss today.
Yeah, this is a special episode.
Can't wait to get into it with you. So why don't we put into the MRI machine Deep Space Nine Season 5, Episode 5, Trials and Tribulations.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No. Of course you don't.
This is a story that they thought to do around the 30th anniversary of Star Trek. The 30th anniversary, more than 20 years ago.
Wow, crazy to think about.
Yeah.
This episode opens with the arrival of a couple of no-nonsense gentlemen from the Department of Temporal Investigations.
I'm Delmer.
Luxley.
Unclear if that's a Federation department, an Earth department, a Starfleet department.
They walk around like they are flashing mental badges.
Yeah.
Everyone knows who they are.
Except for they have no badges.
That's what I'm saying. Like they carry themselves as if they have them.
It's as though they don't need no stinking badges.
They are deeply serious about their job.
Yeah.
The kind of serious that gets mocked by others.
They keep saying, like, we're not big fans of jokes, but then they're kind of doing bits a little bit. Like, they definitely have a shtick.
Right. There's a... No one's asking them what they mean.
Right. At least people are game for their little thing.
Right.
Go back to the beginning, if there is such a thing. That's a little crack. That's not something somebody that doesn't like jokes would say.
Right. That's someone who isn't listening would say. There's a visual language in this episode that is obvious later, but more subtle here, which is you're putting serious people who have a serious job into serious costumes. And by that, I mean these guys are just wearing gray cloaks. There's nothing about them that stands out.
It's all like pinstripe wool that you would see in just kind of like a drab business suit.
Right.
But it's kind of a Starfleet era set of garments. It's like a jacket over a vest over a shirt, but all in the same fabric.
Right.
Very serious men. Ruddy-faced as well. They apparently are only hiring ruddy-faced white guys at the Department of Temporal Investigations.
The one guy looks like Clancy Brown to me, the taller guy.
Yeah.
And I thought for sure it was him. I had to look it up. He's got to get that a lot, right?
Right. They're definitely Clancy Brown types. Do you think that these guys, when they show up to auditions, also see Clancy Brown at those auditions?
Yeah, it's like...
He's going to get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, they are here to investigate a time crime. And, or not a time crime, but like an incident where some Starfleets did some time traveling. And
you know what they say about time crime, Ben? When you do the time crime, you have to do the time crime time.
Did you ever watch the web series Space Talk from Dimension Eugene?
No. This is a public access thing?
This is an early web thing that Eugene Merman did.
Oh.
Like, back in the, like, is YouTube gonna be a thing days.
Uh-huh.
I think it was on Super Deluxe. It was like a talk show, and Eugene Merman was the talk show host, but it took place in space.
Uh-huh.
And one of them opened with, like, hey, welcome back to the show. Today on the show, of course, we're celebrating the 100th anniversary of the invention of time travel. Or is it? We can never know.
Time jokes are the greatest.
Yeah.
And that's why these guys are so uninterested in such humor.
Right.
They've heard it all before, or have they?
Oh, shit. But the little D went back in time, and it's sort of a Sisko retelling the story of how structure of episode.
Yeah.
They show the ship in orbit of Cardassia, where they are picking up the orb of inconvenient time travel that the Cardassians are like repatriating to Bajor.
That's pretty nice of them, right?
Yeah, it's kind of just like spontaneously the Cardassians decided to do the right thing on some subject.
You can't trust unmotivated nice from the Cardassians, can you?
No. I wonder if this Arn Darvin character is somebody that the Cardassians knew who he was.
I think so.
Because here's the thing. There's this guy, Barry.
This is Mr. Waddle.
Call me Barry.
He comes up with with the orb. He's human. Comes into the mess hall, makes a big deal about how great it is to be back among humans. You know, drags Worf a little bit for being smelly, I guess. He says some kind of like offhand racist stuff.
Sorry.
You know?
Yeah, but it turns out he can say it because he is.
Right. It's one of those moments, though, where like everybody in this scene thinks he is a human. And
right.
Bashir and O'Brien are sitting there like hearing him say racist stuff in Worf's presence. And they, instead of speaking up and scolding Barry, they play it off and kind of like tell Worf, like, oh, don't worry about him. He's kind of set in his ways, you know.
You sure just throw around the word Patak a lot. Pretty uncomfortable.
It's from a different time, you know.
His story is super interesting to me. Sort of like the guy who stayed on the volcano as it was about to explode. His story is he was left behind before the Klingon and Cardassian war popped off.
Right. He's a dealer in gemstones, which has some interesting reverberations later in the story. But he's going to be taking a ride back to Deep Space Nine with them. And so they set off, and they're under cloak, and suddenly there's a banger.
It's a temporal banger. What do we know about chronoton particles? Commander Riker can tell us.
They're creating a temporal vortex.
Time travel.
And this temporal banger does a lot of things at once. it takes the antenna off of the top of the little D and then throws it into the bushes because their view screen is fucked. Their sensors are off. They've decloaked, and someone has activated the transporter. It's just bang, 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 bang.
I was really impressed with the level of chill that Sisko maintains amidst all of this, because they know that something like pretty messed up is going on, and he's like leaned back in his chair with his fingers crossed, like he might as well be like sipping some of his captain's soup.
The only way you flap Sisko is to, like, there's nothing unjust happening here. The way you get him loud and angry is putting him in a position to witness an unjust action.
Yeah, he doesn't get morally outraged at a banger.
Right.
But when they get the tracking back on the view screen, there is a ship right in front of them. They're still under cloak, so invisible to this ship, but it is none other than the Entrepreneur, no bloody A, B, C, or D.
Looks pretty great too, right?
Yeah. Is this the CG redo of the Entrepreneur from the HD TOS?
There are pages and pages and pages of production notes about this episode. And they made a new model of the OG Entrepreneur for this episode.
Wow.
And they spent so much time on it.
I believe it.
They kind of operated from a position of paranoia because, from what I read, they were afraid of super nerds scrutinizing their model and finding a mistake. And they didn't want that to happen. So they...
I mean, what a weird fear to have.
Yeah,
as custodians of a franchise... Of a sci-fi franchise, right?
Right. I mean, I wouldn't know what that's like at all. But I think there's that right there is the reason why things look so great in this episode. And it starts with the model work, and all of these sets were built for the episode.
It is pretty fucking great and pretty seamless.
Yeah.
There's got to be like a cost case to be made for making a new model also, right? Like, A, if we make a new model, we can... You know, put it in the Air and Space Museum, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you're going to get extended value out of it. But, I mean, you know, this is the same studio that threw the Enterprise D bridge into a dumpster.
Right.
After Star Trek Generations. So, I mean, I guess in certain circumstances they could see future value from this stuff, but not in other cases. I don't know. I don't know how they make these decisions.
I mean, like, I remember going... to a science museum when I was a kid and seeing like the Art of Star Wars exhibit, and they're just being like everything from when they made the first Star Wars was like in a glass case on display. And like, I don't understand why like it's so hard to predict what will be worth saving.
There's probably not an area of this exhibit that had any of the dialogue from the Star Wars movies in it. Like that's just an empty room.
I don't like sand.
There's nothing to see or appreciate there.
You're saying that's not one of the artistic parts of Star Wars?
Exactly.
It's good thing I'm here to decode your jokes.
What do you mean? Gold Ducat. The cut.
Gold Ducat. So. But they've traveled back in time, Adam.
They need to figure out what happened, and so they convene a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Worf is the presenter. What he presents to the assembled gathering there is that the orb has been stolen by their passenger, who they now believe to be Arn Darvin.
His real name is Arn Darvin. He's a Klingon altar to look human.
He is the first Ash Tyler in Star Trek history.
Whoa. If you haven't seen Star Trek Discovery, you don't even know what that means, man.
Yeah, he's a Klingon made to look like a human, which back in original series days, wasn't that hard. I think you just rub the blackface off of them, and then that's what you get.
You rub the problematic darkening makeup.
Yeah.
So the story that they tell is that Arn Darvin attempted to sabotage a Federation colonization effort and failed, and was then kind of excommunicated by Klingon intelligence. Like they sort of did that thing where they disavow all knowledge, like right. Mission Impossible always threatens to. But the issue is that this new Arn Darvin from their time is now has transported himself off the little D, so they need to go find him. And
it's funny that in the future, capitalism is punishment, because this guy was sentenced to a life of being a merchant, something that rubbed him the wrong way as a Klingon.
I've got a hot take, Adam.
Yeah?
In the present, capitalism is also punishment.
Well said.
They're worried that he's going to go meet up with his younger self and prevent the moment in history that caused his life to go to shit.
I love this. This is an example, I think, of real life wagging a script dog, because they got Charlie Stanford Brill to reprise his role as Arn Darvin. And he's the same guy who played the same role in the Trouble with Tribbles episode.
Yeah.
And when they were workshopping what to do for this 30th anniversary episode, like, the creators got together and were like, just spitballing shit. And Ira Stephen Bayer was like in some fucking restaurant with a couple of guys.
And he took his mouth out of the ass of a member of the Blue Man Group and said,
is that Charlie Stanford Brill, like, dining with his wife a couple tables over? Like,
that's why his goatee is blue.
He clocked him in public.
Wow.
And was
he
like,
recognized him.
And was like, maybe you'd want to do Star Trek again, and totally solicited him into doing this. And that's how, I think that's the core of how this whole episode came together. Like, you start with him and his availability.
Was Charlie Brill like, were you just eating ass, and specifically eating the ass of a member of the Blue Man Group? Hence having a blue goatee.
How much Pepto-Bismol do you have to chug to make your poop blue? That is a lot of Pepto.
Yeah. Have you ever had, like, Kool-Aid turn your poop green?
No.
That's a phenomenon.
Is it? Do you have to drink green Kool-Aid, or any Kool-Aid will do?
I think I had red Kool-Aid turn my poop, like, bright green. Like, a green that does not look like it should be biological in origin.
You get some friends to check it out?
Well,
it had to hurt to flush it down, right?
This was on a backpacking trip, and we all had this Kool-Aid, and then around the campfire, we're like, hey, so when I pooped today, and everybody was like exchanging notes on their turds, and it was like, wow, it happened to all of us. Must have been the Kool-Aid.
You had to bury it though, right?
Yeah, 100 feet from trailer stream.
Gotta do that.
6 inches underground minimum.
Boy, camping sounds fun. Anyway, past Darvin fucked up by getting caught. And so what future Darvin wants to do is prevent past Darvin from getting caught. He wants to extricate himself from this timeline.
You know, an ounce of prevention, pound of cure.
Right.
And this is exactly why Sisko does not want to get a visit from the Department of Temporal Investigations.
What you don't want is your time travel poop being so close to the timeline.
Yeah.
That's what's happening here.
You don't want the poop to despoil the time stream.
Exactly.
And Sisko really just doesn't want to deal with the paperwork. So, whether it's 2-ply or whatever, he orders the crew to prepare a mission whereby they will find Arn Darvin and prevent him from changing the timeline. And so we get a great Tim Burton Batman getting ready sequence showing all of the little items as they suit up, and most of the crew gets into some cool TOS era uniforms.
Looks good on you, sir.
I was wondering if they ever thought about including Garrick in this.
Oh.
In the garment play, you know?
Oh, like if he was tagging along for some reason, he got to, like, fit them for their uniforms?
Yeah, I just feel like he would have to be involved, right? Or do you just get it out of a replicator?
Yeah, maybe you can just walk up to a replicator and say, like, circa 2306 uniform for a lieutenant, and it spits it right out.
Yeah. So what they find out is that Arn has beamed over to either the space station or the old entrepreneur. And so they've got to like split the away team. Some of them going to the space station K7. Sisko, right. Dax, and Bashir are going to the old entrepreneur.
And O'Brien.
Right.
And so it's Worf and Odo that go to the space station. And the argument is made that this space station is a real teeny tiny little operation. It looks big from the outside, but that's all storage, and there's really not that many people living aboard it. So Worf and Odo get into like the cargoiest of cargo jackets, and they beam over to the station, and in their Starfleet regalia, Dax, Bashir, O'Brien, and Sisko beam over to the entrepreneur, and they're kind of like working their way inward. They beam to either end of the ship and start to eliminate candidates for Arn Darvin-ness.
These pockets are like a D cup on Odo, right? Like, you can't use pockets this big.
Yeah, this is like pockets big enough to put like a 15-inch laptop on your chest.
You could carry 4 gallons of milk on the front of Odo's tunic. It's absurd.
He's just got like a straw coming out of each breast pocket.
Yeah. And this is the first scene in the episode where the magic starts to happen, right? Like the idea of them occupying the same space of characters like Uhura and Chekhov.
Yeah. They beam over, we get like a crowded entrepreneur hallway, which is very like, you know, the couple of episodes of TOS that we've watched for Greatest Discovery. Like, it is always remarkable how many people are like weaving in and out in the hallway, because there's so many people that it's like,
yeah,
you can't like walk around looking at your phone on TOS.
You know what really stuck out to me in the scenes of groups? Like, there are scenes of a lot of people that are clearly comps, and then there are others that are clearly recreated sets with modern actors inhabiting them.
Right.
I think you can tell the difference between how people walk.
Yeah.
In the 60s show versus the people walking around that are modern actors. I really think you can tell.
I think you can too. And it's a very like subtle critique, because for the most part this is totally fucking seamless.
Yeah.
But modern people do carry themselves a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And that's like such a weird, like, why? Like, what changed?
I don't know, but you can tell. But
like
that,
the way our shoes are manufactured or something?
Yeah. Yeah, up until a little while ago, they were making shoes that could fit on either foot.
One element of this that Dax comments on out loud is that women wear far less in this era, and perhaps a certain posture is necessary to maintain the merest shroud of modesty.
Right. Odo and Worf begin their investigation in the place that I would probably choose. They're over at the bar, the station bar.
Yeah.
And they see a guy named Cyrano Jones interact with the bartender there, and he brandishes a tribble. And this is Uhura wife reacts here to the to the cute furry thing in a very fun way.
May I hold it?
Yeah. All of these scenes are like, you kind of, it's a fun puzzle watching them, right? Like, you know, there's a close-up of Odo and somebody walks right in front of him.
Yeah.
And that's a body double of Chekhov and Uhura. And then you cut to shot from TOS with Odo kind of in the background, comped in.
They went so far as to, like, change what film stock they shoot the show on to make it cut easier with the old stuff.
Wow, that's great.
They really went hard production wise.
It's pretty flawless. Like, occasionally there are shots that have, you know, it's like a wide shot of the bridge and like Kirk is in it and Dax is in it and she's like walking around and you totally believe that she's walking around in the same room as him.
Yeah.
You know, like they're not like down to like the motion tracking of shots where, you know, people's feet aren't floating around on the floor because they couldn't get it exact. Like, they got it exact every shot, pretty much.
Forrest Gump was 94, right?
Yeah.
this is 96. I just feel like, you know, for a long time, Forrest Gump was the measuring stick for like comps of this kind.
Yeah.
And in only 2 years, it got so much better than Forrest Gump. And Forrest Gump looks like trash compared to this.
Yeah. We recorded a Forrest Gump episode for Friendly Fire and we're totally blown away at how badly those effects hold up. And it's amazing that these effects hold up perfectly.
They really do.
What are you doing? Mind what you're doing now?
Exactly.
So that introduces the tribble to the environment.
Yeah.
And also, I think, sets the tone for fun, because from here we cross-cut between the Odo and Worf mission and the Bashir and O'Brien part of the mission, where Bashir, I mean, I don't think that we can let it... His hair is a disaster in this episode, I think. It looks like they tried to go for a Caesar and then bailed out at the last minute.
It's like they didn't want to cut it, but they did want it to be more 60s.
He looks like Seinfeld in that episode where they lower the water pressure of his apartment, you know?
Yeah. I mean, O'Brien's not looking great either, right? With all the like Brill cream in his hair to try and force a curly-haired man's hair into a straight-haired man's style.
I would say that like of everyone, these two are the weirdest looking in the transition, you know?
I wonder if they paired them up for that reason. Yeah, like
they're visually very funny.
Yeah.
They have a great scene with a random crew person. Like, and it's a fun interaction because it demonstrates some like quick improvisational thinking.
Yeah.
By Bashir especially.
They've definitely taken like 201 at UCB when they when this guy kind of he walks up and he's like, "Scotty told me to do this." And they're like, what?
O'Brien's like, "I'm a shopkeeper. How can I help you?
I'm just finishing up this soup. Stir, stir, stir."
Bashir really saves the day here. He's great.
The job pressure's been getting to him. Why don't you take over?
Yeah. The way he plays it off is that he's doing some medical study of stress among people in the workforce, and that O'Brien is just real, real stressed. So maybe this other ensign should take over where he left off.
I think Bashir should continue his study of O'Brien, W/R/T stress. like henceforth, this should be a long-term project.
I like it.
In the bar, Odo and Worf discuss tribbles, and it's clear that Worf knows all about these guys.
Yeah, Worf tells a story wherein the Klingon Empire attempted a tribble genocide.
It must have been the cutest war ever. Except, like, could you imagine the smell on the tribble homeworld, like, of all the singed hair?
Oh, yeah, it's not nice to smell.
Do you think if you beam down to the tribble planet, it's like falling into the dumpster behind a place that cuts hair?
Ugh, Jesus.
So gross.
I feel like a batleth is uniquely bad for a war like that.
Yeah.
Like you're probably, you know, it's like you're constantly getting tribbles just kind of like stuck on the tips of the batleth, and then you have to like reach out and pull them off and then keep swinging.
What you need is a Klingon flamethrower, you know, one with two tips.
It's going to make the smell even worse.
Yeah, pretty bad.
On the Entrepreneur, a red alert sounds, and Dax and Sisko have to cease their scans, their hunt for Arn. And they're in the elevator when they get the idea, like, oh, yeah, like, let's blow in a call to the little D and see if they can tell us what this red alert's all about. And there's a funny little moment where Sisko tries tapping the embroidered Starfleet logo on his chest before realizing that he has to whip out his Moto razor to blow in a call.
I feel like 11 out of 10 actors ham and cheese this moment up, but Avery Brooks does not. The like snap of his fingers and like, oh yeah,
right,
he seems uniquely able to do in a way that is not laugh at him funny.
Yeah. I mean, like, you give this moment to him for the same reason that you give the we don't understand how to use the elevator joke to Colm Meaney and Alexander Siddig. Like, the
right.
they can do that, that, like, oh, of course, it's that simple and we didn't realize it, like, you know, take.
That is such a great point, and I wonder to what degree, like, you almost begin in an episode like this breaking down the references and the jokes, and then you work on who you're going to give them to. Like, who is the most able to sell
right.
this visual gag that we're going to play with?
There's so much about this episode that I wondered. A lot of this dog has to get wagged by the available footage
right.
tale. Like, what scenes can we use that we can plausibly comp people into? Like, you have to watch The Trouble with Tribbles through and carefully mark out the scenes where, okay, like, we can build a set that looks like that. We can get, you know, Odo sitting in the background there in a way that is believable. Like, all of that stuff is, like, you know, there are maybe 10 or 15 shots in this episode where a contemporary DS9 character is put into 1960s Star Trek shot.
Right.
And done well. Like, they didn't try for ones that they couldn't quite nail at all. Like, they had remarkable restraint in this.
Yeah.
But it makes me wonder, like, how the writing process worked. Did they start from what clips they wanted to use?
Ben, I hate to remind you of a moment in your past, but it's the raw materials, right? Where do you get the raw materials for an episode like this? Like, without them, you don't have an episode. You just need to see what you have first.
Right.
It's like checking the cupboard before cooking a dinner.
Back in my days in New York, early after film school, I was hanging around the Upright Citizens Brigade Theater quite a bit, and I approached some sketch comics about making, like, sketch videos with them.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I was like, I have a camera, and at the time I had a little studio in Tribeca that I was renting out for the astonishingly low rate of $200 a month.
In your defense, you had to have sex with a lot of people.
and I had, like, a green screen stage in there. And I was like, we could shoot anything.
Make your dreams come true.
But we shot like a couple of sketches that required green screen, and one of them was two pilots in a cockpit, and like we shot the two pilots, and then I was gonna comp in the cockpit behind them,
mm-hmm.
and I could not find a good plate for the cockpit, and it just like I just never finished the video because I couldn't find a good enough background for it. I was like, fuck. Like, what an idiotic thing to have wasted the 6 hours shooting this to not be able to finish it because, like, I can't Google search the right backdrop for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great comparison. That's the lesson.
Yeah. Glad that I learned that lesson when the stakes were that low.
There is a through line in this entire episode. Like, if you were just going to describe what the motivations are for every character and you got to Dax... Dax wants to meet people.
Yeah, Dax is on kind of like a tourism tip.
She really is, and she is totally amped at the idea that it's Koloth's D7 that is approaching both the station and the ship, and she wants to see him.
It's not as if he would recognize me.
She's on some baby boomer nostalgia. She's like so excited to be back in the 50s.
Yeah, and this isn't the only time she expresses feelings like this about a character in this time frame. Like, there's a tension between her and Sisko, and Sisko's always, like, reining her in.
Bashir's goal in this episode is to fuck his great-grandmother.
You saw the way she looked at me.
On the off chance that it's a time paradox.
It's fucking nuts. So O'Brien and Bashir run into this pretty lady in the turbo lift earlier in the episode, and then they rerun into her later. And she's like, hey, you know, I'm due for a physical later, and here's exactly what time it is.
Yeah, so if you want to see me with my pants off or whatever.
And Bashir, like, totally unprompted after she leaves, is talking to O'Brien, and he's like, I have to fuck her, right? Like, if she's my great-grandma, I have to do it. And O'Brien's like, why did your mind go to that? Why is that your first stop? It's insane. I mean, she clearly is hitting on him.
Yeah.
But there is no reason. I mean, he understands that it may be his great grandmother because of her last name. But there is no evidence that he must fuck her.
No. I mean, I'd say that that's one of the biggest logical leaps that this episode makes. The biggest logical leap that this episode makes by far is that anyone would want to fuck Bashir when he has this haircut.
Gotta grow it out, Doc. I don't know, maybe not go out so much for the next 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Morn, morn,
morn. Dear sweet morn,
morn,
morn.
Evening, everybody.
Morn.
Stop. Have a time.
So O'Brien and Bashir wind up over on Space Station K7, and they kind of walk into the bar and take some shots at Worf and Odo for spending their entire mission in the bar. They're like, wow, real nice assignment you guys got here. In the midst of this conversation, they tiptoe up to the idea that there are a lot of Klingons already in the room. And you might not have realized this because the Klingons of TOS do not look like Klingons.
Right.
This is an era in which the members of the Klingon Empire chose not to remain Klingon.
They've got no loaf, Ben.
Not a bit of loaf. It's just a thin veneer of too dark foundation makeup.
Yeah. Worf has been low-key embarrassed the entire time just to be sitting at this table, sitting with Odo.
Yeah.
And he doesn't break this feeling at all when they clock these Klingons at the bar.
I thought it was pretty brave of the showrunners to leave in the take where Michael Dorn makes eye contact with the camera and just says, "They're in blackface." All of the people in this scene are in blackface.
It's funny. this is a Hall of Fame racism scene in Star Trek.
Right.
Because on the one hand you get this, and on the other hand you get that O'Brien is white people racist because he can't tell the difference between Kirk and any other random white guy in the bar.
That's Kirk?
Yeah, he's got about the same haircut. What's the difference? This also is a Hall of Fame side boob scene in Star Trek. Waitress in this place is basically wearing Oshkosh Bagosh overall with nothing under it kind of deal.
They cut out the scene where they pull out wide to show the name of the bar, and it was Dump Outs. Bar and Grill.
Yeah. Yeah, the amount of Hollywood tape being used in these outfits.
Yeah.
Pretty excessive.
A Klingon starts talking shit to Scotty, the real Scotty, and he takes great umbrage with this.
Oh, he sure does.
And what happens is it ignites a bar fight that lasts, and I counted, 90 seconds. It is bonkers.
There's a lot going on in this bar fight, because it was like a pretty compound action scene. You can tell it's a pretty involved compound action scene in the original footage.
Right.
Like, there's the whole bit where Jones, like, is replicating drinks for himself behind the bar and, like, walking around knocking them back, and then the bartender comes back and takes the other one. Like, there's chairs flying, there's punches getting thrown, and they add another layer of that by comping in O'Brien and Bashir and Odo and Worf into these shots. And there's a bunch of shots where, like, it is like O'Brien punching a guy where clearly, like, they painted out somebody else punching that guy.
It's really cool because it blends green screen and real set construction. Like,
right.
You can cut back and forth and pan through and foreground, background, a lot of this stuff. It hangs together great.
And they see Arn Darvin, like, through a door when the bartender comes back in.
It's Darvin!
A great comp where he's just in the background going like, whoop, gotta go.
If you're Arn, you gotta stay away from the bar, right? What are you doing?
Yeah, that's not the place to be.
No.
The thing that tips them off is that Odo had come into the bar and ordered a Ractagino.
And the waitress has never heard of that, but it's the second time she's gotten that order today. So yeah, Odo and Worf spot Arn and give chase. But O'Brien and Bashir are not quite as lucky. They get the Starfleet MPs catch them.
There's a fun scene where Dax and Sisko run into Kirk and Spock.
Yeah.
And Dax makes it clear that she's very attracted to one of them.
Those eyes.
And Sisko just assumes that it's Kirk, but it's Spock that she likes. This green uniformed Kirk era is so great. Like, it's the it's Starfleet's version of the Man and the Legend era when the when the insignia is like at the belly, pointing at the belly.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Yeah, but in Dax's mind, the Legend is really Spock.
And that's how we see Kirk for the first time. We see him after the bar fight when he sort of dresses down Chekov. Like, all of the assembled bar fighters are lined up. And this is another great bit of production here because O'Brien is standing in the line with everyone else.
It's really well done, like Kirk casting a shadow on O'Brien and stuff.
Who started the fight?
I don't know, sir.
That shadow was key, wasn't it?
Yeah. There's a lot about this scene that I thought was really interesting. Like, this is not the kind of reprimand that Sisko or Picard ever had to do, where they get everybody that works for them, like, standing in a line at parade rest and, like, tell them that they really fucking blew it.
I can't remember that ever happening.
And I think that's so interesting, like, the idea of progress being baked into this kind of moment.
The future's shame-free, Ben.
Yeah. I mean, but also just like the professionalism of Starfleet is so much further along.
That meeting is adjourned, and after the group is released, Bashir and O'Brien realize that the Tribbles have multiplied, and they are multiplying at an alarming rate.
They get the story from Arn Darvin with remarkable ease, right?
Right.
It's almost like off-screen, like Odo just kind of reporting back to Sisko, like, hey, we caught him, and he gave a full confession. He gloats a little bit, like, oh, you'll never be able to stop me because the bomb is in a Tribble. But it's like, yeah, but we know what the plot is, so, like, we can actually work on the problem.
It's weird. It's like they're not occupying the same logical space because he's got the confidence of a bad guy who has just succeeded in his mission.
Right.
And Bashir and O'Brien and Sisko, like, the DS9 crew are operating from the position of being time travelers.
Right. Like, if only we could travel in time and stop this.
I wonder if they ever thought to use the orb multiple times. Like, if they did something, they fucked it up and then had to redo it using the orb.
Yeah.
Like Bashir fucks his great-grandma, decides that that was not what he should have been doing.
Yeah.
And then they back up the tape so he doesn't.
There is an implication that Dax has fucked McCoy, isn't there?
I think it's more than an implication. I think she confides. She confesses that she does.
He had the hands of a surgeon.
Dax knew McCoy was going to be a great doctor when he brought the speculum into the bedroom.
So this is the part of the Tribbles episode where it starts to be just Tribble bits.
Yeah.
Like, Kirk comes in and sits down in the captain's chair, and it is a Tribble whoopee cushion.
Yeah, the whoopee Tribble bit, I mean, it's a classic.
My farts don't sound anything like that.
It's the same problem with the Tribble as it was with Arn Darvin to begin with, which is they need to determine whether the bomb is on the entrepreneur or the station.
Yeah.
And so Sisko and Dax do a scan of the entrepreneur and eliminate that, but then they need to go search the station. And the mathematics of this problem are discussed quite a bit. There's like millions of Tribbles now.
1,771,561.
And only one Triblom.
Yes, Adam, but only one Triblom.
They can't possibly scan these Tribbles fast enough, and they should know that, and yet they still do it anyway. Why?
Because we gotta try, you know?
Yeah.
Gotta try and stop the timeline from changing. And so Sisko and Dax wind up in one of these grain silos, and this is the grain that is going to be used in this Federation colonization effort, and the Tribbles have been feeding on it and have basically eaten themselves dead because they're at one point in the silo talking about how all of these Tribbles have eaten themselves to death. pretty gruesome. It kind of fucks up the math, though, right? Like, the multiplication math only works if all of the triples are alive and reproducing.
Right.
But anyways, they're like, there's some fun match on action stuff where, you know, Kirk is in a hallway and he opens kind of an overhead trap door and Tribbles come dumping out of it, and you cut to the inside and Sisko and Dax watch Tribbles fall through that door.
Pretty nice sequence.
Yeah. And as they scan, they figure out which of the Tribbles is the explosive one, the Triblom, if you will.
Thank you.
They find the needle in the universe of needles.
Was Kirk's standing under the storage compartment the first instance of, like, overstuffed closet in an 80s movie? Like, visual gag?
It is a rough gag that really doesn't stand the test of time, because he definitely, like, leans into the...
Yeah,
you know,
he
like,
does.
If you are as put out as your face says, why are you, like, angling your body to get more under this hole?
Yeah, he was really told to sell it, yeah. Clearly. How do you think that this Triblom was going to operate? Because when Sisko finds it, he picks it up, he moves it around before finally putting it on top of his tricorder to be beamed away. But, like,
right.
How did it actually work? Like, how did Darwin expect it to kill Kirk? Was it on a timer?
Maybe it's a time Triblom. Maybe yeah. It's a proximity Triblom, but it's Kirk's proximity that's the issue.
Yeah, I guess that would have to be it.
Yeah.
So he puts it on top of the tricorder. Kira, in one of her only scenes in the episode, beams it into space. It explodes. It blows big. Here's the thing about this scene, though, Ben. So they've been using the transporter at intervals that the old entrepreneur allows, because its sensors cycle in such a way that they can use the transporter or decloak, like, whenever the sensors cycle.
Right.
But there's no mention of this. As soon as the Triblom is found and beamed away, Kira just does it. So she breaks the rules of the episode by saving the day.
Well, maybe she decloaks, beams for 3 seconds, and then cloaks up again.
Yeah, but it's very specific moments that the old entrepreneur sensors allow for this window. It's not just every 3 seconds. It's a 3-second moment that they can predict and use.
Maybe. It didn't bother me.
Oh, it bothered me big time.
I'm sorry, buddy. Well, the day is saved. Arn Darwin gets nailed by Kirk as history intended, and the yo-yos from the Department of Temporal Investigation are like, great, well, is that the whole story? And Sisko says, well, no, I went back for one more moment in the past before we return to the future using the orb that Kira conveniently learned how to use. Did we have any story element to explain how the orb got recovered, by the way?
Nope. Did not. They're like, for the orb being the primary motivator for this story, we rarely see it. We don't know how it works. We only know that it does, and then we don't know where it goes.
Yeah. So this last moment that he went back for, though, is a little check in with the cap on the bridge of the entrepreneur, and it's Sisko just kind of expressing his admiration for one of his predecessors as a Starfleet captain.
Before I leave, I just want to say it's been an honor serving with you, sir.
And it's really well done. It's a touching moment, like a touching moment to be able to construct from old footage of Shatner against new footage of Avery Brooks.
There are some pretty neat photographs of how they did this and the actor that Avery Brooks replaces in this scene. It's really well done.
Is it? I wondered if this was footage from The Trouble with Tribbles or if they pulled it from a different episode.
It's from Mirror, Mirror.
Oh, interesting.
So they harvested footage from not just The Trouble with Tribbles, but from multiple episodes in order to make this one work.
It's really cool and well done.
Yeah. So the Time Police have that moment where they're like, yeah, I would have done the same thing. Kirk's pretty cool.
Yeah, after an earlier jag about how he's like basically public enemy number one from their perspective.
The rules never apply to Kirk in any way or in any time.
Yeah, that's really true. Yeah, and it seems like these guys are basically paragons of that phenomenon. Like, they consider him to be a menace, but also totally drop that the second the idea of admiration comes up.
Right. The time police leave through ops publicly, which gives, like, they sort of time police perp walk themselves away. Everyone lets out a big sigh of relief. And then we cut to our button, Ben, our button on the promenade.
Yeah. Sisko walks down to talk to Odo. Odo is relieved that the time police did not ask about Kay. Not going to be said out loud. It's going to be revealed in a cutaway to Quark. The camera pulls out from Quark at the bar. It reveals that the bar is piled high with tribbles. There are tribbles on the walls. There are tribbles on his head. There are tribbles all over the floor of the promenade. Everybody's holding a tribble. Station is lousy with tribbles, Adam.
Up to and including Quark, who is sort of wearing one in a Carmen Miranda fashion. Wordlessly.
I think a Carmen Miranda fashion would be he has a hat and there are lots of tribbles on the hat.
Yeah.
Instead, he's just wearing a tribble.
I would be so upset if I had to get into makeup and I had zero lines.
Yeah, you really hope that they built this clip into a shoot day on a different episode where he's actually doing something.
Yeah.
Just for his sake.
Yep.
You really want to do this here, now, okay, let's do it.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
There's two ways to answer it. Like, did I like the episode? Yes. Did I think it was a good episode? No.
Wow.
I did not. And here's why. The biggest deal in the entire episode is Department of Temporal Investigations. That there is a department, and that these two work for it, and we know nothing about them or their work or anything.
Not the first time time travel has come up in this season, in this series, and this is the first we hear about it.
It's bonkers. Sisko does not ask them anything about their jobs or how they do them, which, I mean, Sisko's a curious person. I think he should have and could have asked questions to have a little banter or back and forth with them.
I mean, I think it makes the case that he's dealt with them before, or other people from their organization.
What's weird is that this is the first time and the last time.
Right.
We don't run into the Department of Temporal Investigations again in Star Trek. This is it. And that's insane to me.
Yeah. Maybe they're like an artifact of a time travel loop that got closed.
Here's the bigger issue, though. While the episode was super enjoyable and I liked it, there's no story here. This is nostalgia instead of story.
Yeah.
It's an excuse to take a museum tour, and that's fun. It makes for a fun episode, but it doesn't make for an episode, per se. Like, I feel like this is what people wanted Discovery to be, but there was no way it could be. Like, you know that by watching an episode like this.
Right.
You can't go back and live in this for 8 or 16 episodes and make a series out of it. It's not sustainable.
There is an absurdity in the idea that a show from the 60s is in continuity with a show from the 90s that is exposed by this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Like the idea that these like crappy sets from TOS are like a real spaceship is such a hard thing to make believe in the context of the far, far better sets of Deep Space Nine.
I am fully willing to suspend the visual disbelief of that. I really am. I really am. But there's just not enough story here.
They really have to kind of write themselves into a pretzel to make it make sense.
Yeah. I understand they're doing the best they could with what they had story-wise. To a certain extent, like, this is the best they could have done with one of the best TOS episodes and most memorable that they had. Like, what else could they do? I guess the stakes just never felt dangerous in any way, ever. And maybe in that way, this episode is a success if what you're trying to do is just make a fun, broad episode that most people who have ever watched Star Trek could enjoy. Successful.
I think that's what they set out to do. Like, they, it's just a Hey, wouldn't it be weird if?
Yeah.
Like it's like a sideline comic series.
Yeah.
Of what if the X-Men met the crew of the Enterprise D or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's not meant to like push the canon forward or anything. It's just for funsies. It's a little 30th anniversary tribute.
Yeah, it's an anniversary bottle, huh?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah. I do too. I'm not saying that I didn't.
I had to rewind several times to like wrap my mind around the story for sure.
And, right.
That's because the story is entirely exposition. There's no like emotional stakes. There's no character change of any kind. It is just characters from one show walking through scenes of another show and remarking on it and explaining how they got there and how they're getting out of there.
I wonder how much of this has to do with Darvin, because, you know, out of one side of my mouth, I was praising the idea of getting the actor back to do this. So you remember in A Matter of Time in TNG, when Matt Frewer's character was in, like, his plan had failed, you reached an emotional climax with him.
This is the con man from the future episode of TNG.
But Darvin is so flat throughout this episode that I think that was the thing maybe that primarily prevented me from feeling like there were any stakes.
Yeah. They didn't give him a lot to do.
Yeah, they really didn't.
He didn't have a lot to do in the original episode, I think.
No, and maybe by increasing the stakes, you make it less fun. There's like a push and pull to these elements. It's interesting to talk all of this stuff out. It's making more sense the more we do.
Yeah. I think we'll talk about it a little bit more on the next episode of our other podcast, The Greatest Discovery, because we're going to be revisiting The Trouble with Tribbles on that, right?
That's right.
So go listen to that after you listen to this.
And let's go check out Priority One messages.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of Priority One messages here. The first one is from the JS Guild trademark. And it's for Andrew W.H. Goes like this. Congratulations, Dad. May your child turn out to be more like Lal than Wesley, the boy. Kids grow up fast, though not as fast as Troy's son. Enjoy your time at home together, and we'll see you back on the bridge.
Oh.
That's very sweet, except for Lal dies early.
Oh.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least Wesley turns into like a being of pure light or something.
Hey, we don't know that. I mean, he turned into that being, but what happened after, who knows? Yeah.
He's like a traveler type now.
Yeah.
I guess if your son turns into a traveler, that probably means you're not really in touch with them any further. And that would be sad.
If you were offered the chance to become a traveler person, but the cost was lobster hands, would you take the traveler up on that deal?
Yeah, I mean, what am I using my hands for?
I don't know, man.
I do all my typing with my thumbs, Adam. I'm on that smartphone.
All I'm saying is that it wouldn't be an immediate yes.
I'd rather have lobster hands than be Lal. I'm not trying to drag the JS Guild TM for what they're saying here. I think it's a well-intentioned, nice message.
I'm not trying to drag anyone either. I'm trying to drag the traveler.
Yeah. I can see that you have a strong anti-traveler bias.
Yeah.
Very ugly.
Ben, our second Priority One message is from I'm Gowron Burgundy. And the message is for JL Pipes and crew. Hey, we know these guys.
Yeah.
Message goes like this. You guys are the best FOD fleet in timelines. Can you believe Captain to the Uxbridge is telling the other fleets that our Admiral Hip Hop and Flopser is five drop bears stacked on top of each other in a trench coat? They are without honor, and their starbase smells of cabbage.
Wow.
I did that line read in that way where I just turned off my brain, and I was like, I'm reading these words in the order that they're there. I don't know what they mean.
That's a warm honeyed bosom level of impenetrable.
Yeah, it is. It is. Star Trek timelines. I've yet to play that.
Maybe there's a Twitch stream in your future.
Could be. What there is in our future, every week, our Priority One messages, Ben.
Yeah, so if you would like to leave one, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message. We really appreciate it because it's helping us to afford to make this show. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to be brief. If you unsolicited just put out into the world that you think it would be a good idea to fuck your great-grandma, that makes you a drunk Shimoda. And so my drunk Shimoda is Dr. Bashir.
Adam, I'm going to be brief. Many episodes end on a slide whistle, but very few characters are a slide whistle. But in this episode, one character is, that is Quark.
Hmm. Indeed. He's wearing that triple hat.
Gotta get that gold press hat. Get that gold press hat.
Am I right?
Microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. Now, if you're like me, you were born in the 80s, and THC was vilified by teachers and police officers and members of the clergy and politicians, and it really got ratcheted up to a fever pitch. So I think it is fair to have a little bit of trepidation around this kind of thing. But I think for a lot of people, a microdose of a cannabis product is actually a great thing. And if you are interested in seeing why it is so ridiculous that the world went so reefer mad for so long, I encourage you to give microdose gummies a try. So get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Promo code SCARVS. It's available nationwide. That's microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS for 30% off and free shipping. Microdose.com, promo code SCARVS. Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water. And I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scarves for 25% off.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Ben, what are we watching on the next episode?
Next episode is, well, in addition to the episode of The Greatest Discovery we already mentioned, the next episode of this show is season 5, episode 7, Let He Who Is Without Sin. While vacationing on the planet Risa, Worf falls under the influence of a traditionalist group bent on destroying the pleasure paradise.
Oh, boo!
Yeah, get these fucking Puritans out of my fuck fantasy.
It's not where they belong.
Yeah, get them out of here.
I mean, unless your thing is fucking Puritans, which it could be, I guess.
Only with enthusiastic consent, Adam.
Right. Wow. Well, what do you say we see how we're going to watch that episode?
Adam, I suddenly have a hankering to play some games, specifically the game of buttholes, The Will of the Prophets. So I'm heading over to gach.biz/game.
All right.
Where we keep the wheel of fate that determines how our next episode will be performed.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
And I'm going to go ahead and say this. Whatever we land on is going to be true not just for the next episode of The Greatest Generation, but also for the next episode of The Greatest Discovery.
What?
Because we're going to be reviewing... I think they're both the next episode after this episode.
All right.
So it's not, the stakes aren't that high, but we could land on the Naked Now, so we would have to record 2 episodes from the bathtub.
It's true, Ben. Danger ahead, danger behind.
Yeah.
I'm stuck in this podcast with you.
We could also land on that banger. So I'm going to go ahead and roll it. Oh my goodness, I think we hit the banger because we are now back on square 19.
Chula!
Did I win?
Hardly.
Shoot. We're going backwards, Ben, on this board.
Yeah. We have not made a ton of progress on this board lately.
No.
But a plain old episode, a good old episode, right?
The best kind.
Yeah, we're going to have fun.
Did you know that you are currently viewing the best Star Trek podcast?
Wow.
It's true.
Fuck.
There's only one way a show like this is possible. It's through the support of our many viewers.
That's true, Adam. People who would like to support the show may do so monetarily by going to MaximumFund.org/donate and setting up a recurring monthly donation. But they could also do so by just leaving a nice review on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast software they use. I think, is it Stitcher that I saw that we only have one review on?
What?
Yeah, there's like a couple of podcatcher apps out there that we have very few reviews on. So if you use Stitcher or Spotify or any of those, go ahead and get a review in there. I think we could really use it on some of the non-Apple podcast platforms.
Wow. Really underachieving in a couple of areas.
Yeah. Why are you letting the Apple users rack up 2,700 reviews or whatever when you're on some other platform leaving 0 reviews?
The people who hate Apple products and software have got a ton of energy.
They're incredibly vocal whenever the concept of Apple podcasts is mentioned on the internet. They're in that comment section going, "Fuck Apple," or whatever. Like, turn your crankiness into something positive.
Exactly. Jeez.
Yeah, it's perfectly fine as far as I can tell. You seem to be very angry at it. Maybe let that anger blossom into something beautiful.
Mm.
Something positive.
That sounds nice.
It would be great.
Great week in and week out are the collectible joke trading cards made by Bill Tilly. You can find those on Twitter at Bill Twilly, 1973. Bill Twilly is of course the Twitter account that makes garments out of every episode we do.
Yeah.
Nice wicking jokes.
Adam is on Twitter at Cut for Time. I'm on there at Benjamin AHR. Everybody uses the hashtag Greatest Gen to talk about the show. There's also a Wikia. There's a Reddit sub. There are Facebook groups. all kinds of places to meet up with the friends of DeSoto online and joke around and have a blast.
Music's by Adam Ragusea and Dark Materia.
Thanks to our buddy Nick Dittmer for making the great new artwork on the show.
Yeah, pretty slick stuff. I look forward to seeing that airbrushed on the side of a van. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which has its Horgon displayed prominently.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.